James, this is joint work with Peter Buneman and Igor Kostolev in Edinburgh. So the goal of this work is really kind of to abstract a bit from things that we've seen in a bunch of different systems rather than to propose something really new. So there are a number of systems that track sort of a flat provenance graph or in a database some kind of annotations per row. And some of these also track provenance at multiple granularity levels in different ways. So there's a system called Zoom that's been used for workflow provenance that takes information about what steps in the provenance graph are important to a given user and tries to collapse the unimportant ones so they don't gum things up. And I think Kepler, for example, also has ways of kind of nesting or zooming in and zooming out of the graph to kind of allow you to focus on the level of detail that you're interested in. So the goal of this work is to kind of, like I said, abstract away from this a bit and give a formal, high-level, OPM-like model of provenance with the notion of granularity or hierarchy. And to start to understand the interplay between control flow and data flow or abstractions and provenance models, in particular, if you start with a kind of fairly vanilla programming language or workflow language, understanding how to map that to the hierarchical provenance graph model that we want to talk about. So in this talk, I'm going to lie and pretend that OPM is just a bipartite-directed graph, acyclic bipartite-directed graph. So I'll just consider graphs with some nodes which we'll call process nodes and some other nodes which we'll call artifact nodes and edges linking between these in an alternating way. And there can also be arbitrary labels on the nodes and edges. OK, so just for example, this is at least my view of a kind of OPM-like graph that you would get if you took a kind of natural graph that you might associate with a little program that says, OK, here are some function definitions, and then we'll run g on f of 1 and the second argument 4. So you see, in this graph, we actually, we say, okay, well, we run f first, and that's f of 1 is adding x and 1, and x is 1. So we're adding 1 and 1, and we get 2, and so on. And eventually, we get some result 12. So this isn't really a workflow language, right, because I'm talking about arithmetic operations. But everybody hopefully knows what those mean, and I didn't want to clutter the slide up with lots of inessential details of some workflow scenario. But so the point here is that this kind of low-level graph says all the kind of primitive operations that were applied and how they were combined, how their results were combined. But it discards a lot of information about the kind of function nested structure of the calls of the functions that were performed in the execution. Okay, so we're going to try and recover that. So the idea is to augment the kind of basic OPM-lite graph structure that I talked about just now with a call tree. So that's a tree that kind of lives on the side of the graph that tells you which, they don't necessarily have to be functions, but which kind of larger processes were present and which and kind of the relationships between them. So nesting structure on the processes in the graph. And for each node in the tree, we're going to associate a subgraph or a subset of the nodes of the graph that induces a subgraph, subject to a couple of constraints. And basically, the constraint is the nesting should respect the tree edge relationship. So if f is a parent of g, then f should cover more of the graph than g. So it kind of gets smaller as you go down the graph, as you go down the tree. And so in particular, the root of the tree should be the whole graph, should be associated with the whole graph, OK? And then there's some additional technical conditions, which I won't really go into it, but basically which say that it makes sense to think of the induced subgraph as a kind of standalone connected OPM graph rather than something weird, OK? So that isn't necessarily very clear, so let me just illustrate how that plays out in this example. So what we're going to do is we're going to associate the subgraph containing basically this part up here with this call of f. So f is only called once, g is only called once, h is only called once. But they might be called more than once, so I'll give them little numerical indexes. Okay. And you know, so you can see G contains a call to H, and that means that the part of the graph corresponding to H has to be smaller than has to be contained in the part corresponding to G. Okay. So the tree part is actually just this tree off to the side, and the mapping isn't given explicitly, but you can kind of figure it out from the colors. Okay? So far, so good. Okay, so now, given one of these hierarchical graphs, the graph with a kind of orthogonal tree structure, we want to define something which we'll call views, which are basically what you get if you only want to expand part of the call tree. Okay, so say you're interested in seeing what happens inside G, but not seeing what happened inside F or inside the call to H. You want to take the subtree of T of the call tree, and take the graph and expand it out only up to the point where the boxes that you're not interested in you want to collapse the boxes that you're not interested in and expand everything else. Okay, so this makes sense only because of the kind of technical side conditions that I swept under the rug. So if you had a node mapped to kind of isolated islands of the graph, then this wouldn't make sense. Or if you had a node mapped to something that wasn't a subset of its parent's subgraph, this wouldn't make sense. Okay? Right, so as usual, pictures are better, right? So if we take this graph and only expand it up to the children of Maine, so the F and G calls are going to be abstracted, then I've kind of superimposed F and G above here so you can see they're kind of hiding things. And really what that means is that we get a normal non-nested, non-hierarchical graph out that looks like this. Okay. But so if we want to expand a little bit more out, then we can say, okay, show me the top level and G, but don't show me F and H. Okay, and then we'll have F is still hiding what's inside, but G has been expanded out now, and H is still hiding what's inside, so we get something that looks like this. Okay, so far so good? Right, so in the paper, what we actually do is introduce a little kind of simplistic core language that talks about you know, it could be arbitrary primitive operations, not just arithmetic, but in the examples we use, arithmetic. So we have, you know, let binding, we have constants, we have variables, we have these primitive operations, which could be anything. They could be the steps of your workflow instead of addition and multiplication. And so the maybe only interesting thing on this slide so far is that let binding in this language allows us to represent sharing among subcomputations so that you can actually get graphs that are not trees. If you don't have let binding, you can't get graphs. You can only get trees, okay? So really, the provenance graph that you get from this is kind of isomorphic to the expression in some sense, which I'll be hand-wavy about. That is, there isn't really any control flow here. Okay? Right, so the kind of most interesting thing from the point of view of the paper is understanding this notion of nested process structure or nested function call structure. So to model that, I mean, to understand the relationship, we need function calls and function definition. So we just introduce a more or less standard syntax for that. The semantics is standard. And the interesting part is how do you generate a graph that correctly, in some sense, annotates that correctly produces the call tree corresponding to the function call structure and manages the bookkeeping of mapping the nodes of the tree to the subsets of the graph that you produce. And that's, you know, it's a little bit bureaucratic, but, you know, it's not rocket science. So we show how to do that in the paper formally. So then maybe more interestingly, we also wanted to look at nested values or kind of lists and other data structures potentially, but in the paper mostly just lists. So we added, again, in a kind of programming language sense, just the obvious map combinator that takes a function symbol and produces a new function symbol called mapf that we can use as a label of a node in the graph. And we allow things like nil and cons as constants or built-in functions so that we can build lists. So this is, you know, the map operation is second order. That is, we're taking a function symbol and producing a function symbol that we can use as a label. And so the interesting thing from the point of view of the graph semantics is that we're going to wind up with kind of two levels of process structure, right? For each map call to map, we're going to say, you know, the list was read by map, and then something happened, and we produced another list. And those will be linked at the high level. And then at the low level, the elements of the list will each be linked to the elements of the result list by a subgraph. And then those subgraphs will all be nested inside the map subgraph. Okay. So again, pictures are better. So this is in pictures what I just said. So hopefully that makes it clearer. Okay. Right. So then it's done in a different order in the paper because in some sense conditionals are less interesting than functions in map. But for the purpose of the talk, I haven't said anything about control flow really other than function calls. So, but you can add control flow to this. That's kind of not too new. Basically, all we're going to do is to say if you have a conditional like an if-then-else expression, we're going to represent that as a process that takes two inputs. One input is subprocess or a subgraph that produces the Boolean value that says which direction we took, and the other input is the graph that produces the value resulting from evaluating the corresponding expression. So the point is we explicitly represent which direction we took rather than forgetting what happened to lead to the true or false value. But this is, you know, this is also something that we've done in work on traces with Amut and other people, so it's not new. But so in combination, this provides some interesting capabilities. So so here's a more complicated function that makes use of all of the things that I was just talking about: conditionals, lists. This is a recursive function. It's defined in terms of itself at a smaller value, and another kind of function definition that we're going to use for map. So we're saying, okay, build a list. Well, I mean, you can see what happens from the graph here, but we're saying build a list 3-2-1 using this function f that creates a list of decreasing values, and then call a map h on it. Okay, so that's the high level picture, and then if we expand part of the graph, for example, if we expand the outer call to f, right, by saying expand this part, then but not the remaining calls, then we can see, okay, well, the first element of the overall list was produced by this somewhat complicated process that, you know, checked whether 3 and 0 were equal, and that should be false, of course. And then since it was false, evaluated the else branch, which means we cons together the result of f on 3 minus 1 with 3 itself. And so we got the list 3-2-1. So this node should be false. This node should say if false, but otherwise it's correct. And then the result of that is again just still passed into map H. Whoops. And I thought there was, well, I think I skipped that slide. But there, you know, we can also expand other parts. But then the slide isn't big enough to really show what's going on. Okay. So those are the basic ideas of the model, I should have said earlier, this, somewhat like my talk yesterday, is more a talk about, you know, here's something interesting that we think might be useful rather than here's a concrete result. So the main result of the paper really is just these definitions and some thoughts about what they might be useful for. So what might we do next? Well, like I said, there are a number of existing workflow languages, or there's a kind of attempt in its early stages to design a kind of dialect of OPM that captures several different workflow languages that Bertram is involved with, called DOPM. So, and I think DOPM allows for nesting of process structure. I'm not sure though. So, you know, so it would be interesting maybe from a th- theoretical point of view to look at the expressiveness of these different models in terms of translating between them, or look at the kinds of queries that you can support over these different models, maybe using Datalog or maybe a more custom designed query language. There have been some discussions on the W3C group about what if processes or activities can have nested structure. And I think that's, you know, that's probably not on the table for the current iteration of the W3C process, but it could be interesting to clarify. So maybe this work can contribute to that discussion at some point. And there's also work on collections and accounts in OPM or the W3C model that complements, or that this work might complement. So there's already some discussion of how to deal with nested structure or kind of grouping granularity structure. And we have a particular model in mind where the grouping corresponds to kind of larger or smaller parts of a given process. So I carefully avoided talking about really higher order functions where you have lambda expressions. And that's because that kind of makes the problem of how do you label the different boxes a little bit more hairy. But it would be nice to work out what happens if you want to do that, or if you want to talk about, I mean, people have mentioned provenance a couple of times already. I think different people mean different things by that. One thing you could mean is what if you have a language like JavaScript, for example, that has eval, right? So you might want to be able to kind of work out what does it mean to record the provenance of a program that is dynamically building expression and calling eval at runtime. And then you know, how do you relate the provenance graph you get from that inner execution with the outer execution? That's a different kind of dimension of nesting that could be interesting to explore. And of course, I haven't said anything about implementation. And the reason for that is that we haven't implemented anything. We've just written down some interesting definitions. But it would maybe be interesting to look at whether you can implement this in a kind of gradual way, where you run your program or workflow with provenance tracking enabled down to a certain depth. And then if somebody comes along and asks for more, then you may have to rerun some sub part of the computation with provenance enabled. But you can maybe save by not evaluating the whole thing with provenance enabled initially. And then there's a question, if some of the components are non-deterministic, how do you make sure you have enough for full replay? And that's, you know, that's another issue. But that's also something that we've thought about a bit in the context of some other work with Umut and Raleigh Pereira. So we maybe should try to unify these models a little bit to benefit from the strengths of both. Right, so there's a fair amount of related work. There's people have been talking about kind of layering or architectures for recording provenance at different levels of granularity since at least 2009. I think Margot and company had a paper about this. I think I'd heard her talking about this earlier than that. So this is, you know, the motivation for what we're talking about is not new at all. Particular graph model is related in some sense to a model for nested relational calculus that we had in a TAP paper 2 years ago. And there's definitely, you know, we're drawing directly on looking at what people have done in Zoom and in Kepler, although I'm less familiar with exactly how the nesting, how the hierarchical structure works in Kepler. And I guess, well, I mentioned this work already, but it's also interesting to compare this with work that that we've been doing with Umut and Raleigh Pereira on slicing as a tracing and slicing as a foundation for provenance. That's appearing in papers that are appearing that have appeared or will appear soon in other places. So, but in that work, we haven't really. So in that work, we've been focusing on kind of understanding what the right trace model you want is to enable kind of pushing slicing information about the result of the computation backwards through to the beginning. And we've looked at something a little bit like this granularity abstraction as a motivation or as a technique for avoiding for computing the traces more efficiently, or for computing slices more efficiently, but not explicitly yet as a as a technique for presenting the information or doing other things with it. I mean, we've talked about it, but not done that. So maybe we can combine these lines of research somehow. Okay, so I think granularity or hierarchical structure is an important feature of several provenance models. And there hasn't really been a common understanding of what this means or how it should work, for example, in a more generic model like OPM or the W3C model. So our contribution here is just to kind of propose such a basic model and talk about what we might want to do with it. But really, we need to kind of pin down what we actually want to do with this and do something more concrete. So I'd be interested to hear if anybody has suggestions in that direction. Thank you. So OPM itself doesn't have collections, but there are proposals for collections. I guess from my point of view, really the goal of the paper was to kind of put down some definitions that we think generalizes a number of different things, and maybe it stops there, it's sort of if you look at, all right, I'll scare you, right? So these are the actual rules for defining the mapping from the expressions to the graphs. And so when you write that kind of thing down, there's a fair amount of bureaucracy. It's not clear to me that bureaucracy is necessary, so there might just be a better way of writing the rules. But I think, these kinds of things, so I think maybe the challenge is more taking the existing things that are doing something like this and trying to align them in some sense so that they do something compatible or at least something comparable. The paper itself isn't doing something hard. It's just doing something that hasn't really been talked about in a system independent way, I think.